Hello, everyone. My name is Devin Rue. I'm a professional fantasy cartographer and illustrator in the tabletop RPG industry, as well as your host for the Quip and Quill podcast.
I'm James Hake. I'm an RPG designer who has done work for Wizards of the Coast on adventures such as Waterdeep Dragon Heist and Call of the Netherdeep, for Darrington Press on Tal'Dorei campaign setting Reborn, and for Ghostfire Gaming recently on upcoming books like Raider's Guide to Valaka and the corresponding adventure Saga of the Seasons for their dark fantasy setting Grim Hollow. I've also just started a YouTube channel, and depending on when this podcast recording goes up, it may even have its first wave of content up on it. Ugh, I can't believe I just used the word content. I hate that word. its first wave of video essays up yes. on it. I'm very eager to share what I've learned about RPG game design, tabletop game design, over the past almost 10 years now of being in this industry. You know, there are definitely people who are more veteran than me out there, folks like Peter Lee, all sorts of masterful game designers. But I think I have a very interesting perspective to have begun my work at the rise of D&D 5th edition and seen all of the culture and game design philosophy that has grown out of that, to have heard from the wisdom of people like Chris Perkins and Jeremy Crawford, and to go beyond just D&D. You know, there's all sorts of things that I can't talk about right now, but that, you know, pies that I've had my fingers in, things that I've really had the great pleasure and fortune of being involved with. And I want to pass these lessons on to people. I want to follow in the footsteps of great video essayists like Mark Brown of Game Maker's Toolkit, who does truly unbelievable video essays talking about video game design. People like Dan Olson of Folding Ideas, who are really masterful at breaking down the literary criticism of film and occasionally books. And, you know, even the 300-pound gorilla in the room, Matt Colville, who does for dungeon mastering what I hope to do for game design. So you can check me out at James J. Hake. That's H-A-E-C-K. You know, it's in the show notes. He'll see it on YouTube. And I should say, finally, the thing that inspired all of this is a really ardent desire to create a game design community. Twitter is a nuclear garbage fire at the moment, and some may say it always has been, and I would not disagree with them. But as a discourse I accidentally started a few weeks ago now by time of release proved, it really is no hope for intelligent, friendly discussion of any topic more complicated than the world's most benign, uninteresting opinion on Twitter. You know, YouTube does not have a sterling reputation in that regard either, but at least it's a moderatable platform. And maybe from there, a Discord community will grow, or, you know, just some way to foster a tight, kind, thoughtful community that can be, you know, moderated to get rid of the shitheads. I'm really hopeful that people who are interested in game design will come join me over there, starting on YouTube. That's where the essays will be posted. It's where the beginning of all of this will be, and we'll just see what comes from it as time goes on.
Right. Yeah. Every time that I have a guest on here, at some point or another, somebody will be like, "Oh, maybe we should read that," and I'm like, "Oh yeah, no, we fucking should." Like, first off, if anyone knows me, if you know, you know, and I have such an opinion on everything, I'm not afraid to share it. The other thing is, like, anyone, if you have a valid enough argument, you can change my mind. Like, mm-hmm. I don't have any problem having a genuine, you know, intelligent, or at least somewhat intelligent debate about something. For the most part, as long as it doesn't, you know, come down to name calling and everything like that. But one of the reasons I wanted to make this podcast is because so many of us are so afraid to share anything on places like Twitter, because it's just, you just get flambéed in like a few moments after posting. And it, and a lot of times it's just literally people don't quite comprehend what you're writing, you know? And it's like, it's, that's not at all like, as a matter of fact, the main topic of why we're doing another episode is because you asked me about artificial intelligence, AI, and accessibility. Yes. And we wanted to talk about that, which is a very big, you know, thing for me.
This is not an easy topic to discuss in 280 characters. Yeah.
Right. And the other thing is, like, most people don't necessarily understand exactly what AI is and how it functions outside of what we're currently watching happen with the art community. And as somebody has, you've been over my house, you know that I talk to my house all the time to make it work.
Yep.
And for me, this is a huge quality of life and accessibility need that makes it infinitely easier for me to accomplish some things that, as a partially blind person, I find a little bit more difficult to do. Mm-hmm. And boy, I'm not allowed to talk about this on sites like Twitter because everyone wants to tell me about big, bad, evil corporations that are spying on me. Even if that is the case, first of all, let me just apologize to whatever people are listening into my day-to-day fucking conversations, because all I talk about is art, D&D, RPGs, this podcast, my Discord, and like dumbass jokes with my wife constantly. So, like, man, I feel bad for you. But also, I don't think the government is all that fucking interested in my day-to-day anyhow. And I get, you know, I understand the whole privacy thing, and I get that. But at the same time, for somebody like me to be partially blind, my house or my apartments used to constantly be very dark because I'm light sensitive, and I walk around with tinted glasses on all the time to help me deal with bright lights. My wife would be living in a virtual cave if that was the case. But now we have more accessibility where we can have curtains and lights and everything else on for her to have to navigate through what would otherwise be a very dark house, as well as numerous other things. I don't have to worry about trying to read my phone, or I can just literally talk and make a note to one of the Echoes, or, you know, like, there's so many things that make my life easier that, as a disabled person, this is nice.
Right. Things that are essentially effortless for abled people that would really become quite an expenditure of effort for you.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Especially on bad days where I have flare-ups, where just walking 20 feet to my office is excruciating. Much less trying to turn lights on or take notes or go shopping or anything like that. So, yeah.
Well, before we dig too deep into this, I want to kind of lay a foundation for my own beliefs for the people who are listening in on this podcast, because, you know, we're delving into some fairly murky waters here.
Yes.
Things that, like we said, you know, on Twitter would become toxic incredibly quickly. Yeah. I want to say, first of all, that I think AI as a tool has a lot of danger for us from a sort of capitalist sense.
Yes.
And the same can be said of tools like Amazon Alexa or Echo or any of those things, just because they're, you know, they're so top-down controlled from very, very large wealthy companies who are engaged right now in a race to the bottom, as they have been for all time. But the great fear that many artists, whether visual artists like you, and you can speak more to this, or artists who engage in the written word like me, or who engage in composing and performing music, or any number of creative mediums, creative professions, as this technology develops, there is a great risk, as we're seeing right now in the ongoing SAG-AFTRA and Writers Guild of America strikes in Hollywood, that corporations who care more about their bottom line than paying the creatives who work for them, that they will find a way to eliminate creatives from the creative process entirely.
Yes.
And obviously that's bad for working artists, but it's also incredibly bad for consumers, because as it stands, the creative output of AI is not very good. I fully anticipate that changing. That's not the crux of my concern here. AI art has improved immensely over the course of, you know, my awareness of it, right? I still remember very, very clearly, it was not that long ago, that AI generated images never showed you humans with hands, because the fingers would always be all fucked up.
Right.
They can do fingers just fine now. That's the nature of machine learning, of these pattern recognition softwares. Because, you know, you feed them enough good data, eventually they start producing good output.
Right.
I think ultimately the output that we'll be able to get from AI will be fantastic. Like, it will be really high quality stuff in the future, if what we've seen so far is any indication. The great concern here is that, you know, we have computers doing the things that make life worth living. If we, I feel like I'm just kind of saying everything I believe right now. Feel free to jump in, Devin, and we can talk about any topic in particular. Otherwise, I'm just kind of going to outline my entire view of this topic in one fell swoop. But just from a foundational level, all of these tools, I think have great potential for making human life easier, but we are right now using them wrongheadedly in a way to make human life less vibrant. Okay, so with that groundwork there, let's dive into some actual details.
Right. So here's the I am of not two minds, but I have two opinions, two larger opinions on it, and then we'll nuance from there. One, anything AI being used as a tool would be fantastic. Being able to, because a lot of us artists like to use references, or like take a bunch of photography, collage it together, and use that to give us a reference when drawing something or creating something. And to be able to type that in and have a generated image would be infinitely easier, right?
Mm.
So it as a tool would be fantastic. The downside is, ethically, it is not being used that way. It is instead being used, one, without the consent of artists, whether they're writers, photographers, painters, or otherwise. So it's being used without their consent nor compensation. The fact that there is people out there trying to register and copyright this art, which it isn't, by the way, because the concepts of art in its very definition is not something that can be generated by creating a bunch of images already made, collaged together in the way that AI currently does. It isn't making new art. It is meshing art that already exists together to make a different image, but it's not making new art.
Right. Like, let's take Andy Warhol's pop art, for example.
Right. Which, know, that, at that the time, was a lot of controversy.
Highly controversial. Yes.
Yes.
There's that one piece that is, what, it's like four identical image of Marilyn Monroe's face.
Yes.
Placed in a 2x2 grid with different color filters put over them, essentially. That is an image that these days could be made in a second by even, you know, a highly unsophisticated program. You know, basically Instagram filters do that sort of thing every day, thousands and thousands of times. But in its moment, in its contextual moment, that was a revolutionary piece of artwork, and it emerged from human creativity.
Yes.
And that, in my mind, is what makes, you know, that piece of art a piece of art, rather than being a part of the endless wave of, and I will use this word now, content that rolls out through social media, you know, too fast for any human to fully digest it all.
Right. The other thing is that no artist thinks that everybody has infinite amount of money to hire us to create.
Right.
All of us, and the term starving artist is accurate, all of us really understand, like, hey, it is expensive to hire a bunch of artists to create art for a module that you want to put out there, or a book, or whatever. We get it. None of us don't. This is a reason why there's a lot of us who make stock art, or like me, I offer the maps I've already made. They're, you can become a patron and for $5 download them. You know, like, it's, we try to make it as affordable as possible. It's just the initial art that we're creating, because you're, you know, obviously the time and knowledge it takes to create it. So we understand the appeal of adding these things and using them, because you don't want to or can't afford to pay an artist. But the problem that we have is that you are at the same time shoving us out of our freelance work. You're making it harder for us to have jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're using things, like I recently was contacted by somebody and asked me if I would, because I've been a supporter of other projects they've done, if I would be willing to support something else that they were doing. And they sent me the information for it, and there was AI generated art.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I can't, because this literally is what takes away from my livelihood. And as much as I would love to support anything this person is doing, I can't support anything that has AI until there are laws in place that allow people to give consent and or be compensated accurately and adequately for their for the art that they've already made that's being used to teach these programs.
Yeah. Devin, what do you think about the argument? It's almost like a piracy argument where, you know, people who pirated that game would never have bought it for full price anyway, right? People who used AI art would never have hired an artist anyway. Do you think there's truth to this? Do you think this is a valid claim?
Not really. Like, so I think a lot of people, okay. So there's two issues with it. Is one, there's a lot of people who are looking at AI art, and I'm using, every time I say AI art, the art part is in air quotes, people.
We can say machine generated images if we want, but AI art is such a useful little snappy bit of parlance. It's hard to not use it instinctively.
Right. Exactly. Well, it's also what everyone else refers to it as. I want to make sure that everyone grasps what I'm talking about specifically.
Right.
I think that a lot of people are using it when you become, and you start doing art, especially as a traditional artist, there's so much, expectancy about being an artist. Like, one of my favorite stories is I had a friend come over my house one day years and years ago. And I was painting, because I used to do traditional canvas work. And he messaged me, and I let him know, like, oh, I'm painting, come over, have to let yourself in. And so he did, and he was bringing a friend over. And the friend immediately thought, like, I was going to be standing there, like, topless, holding a glass of wine, playing sad music, and like flinging paint on a canvas. And instead, they came in to a room that's completely covered in like draw cloths everywhere, I'm a complete fucking mess. I'm wearing overalls. My hair is all fucked up and all over the place. I look like I haven't eaten in days and I'm going to attack whoever comes to the door. Like, it's, you know, we have such, in movies, create such an idea of being an artist. And I think that for some people, AI is making them feel like they're creating something finally, because they may not have the skills otherwise. But unfortunately, you're not. And still, it's a one, it's the program meshing together a bunch of images other artists created. And two, art in its definition is an emotion. It is art. Makes you feel something.
It's the expression of what's inside you, right, manifested on something outside you that other people can witness.
Right. And hopefully connect with. That's what makes art so important, is that it gives us something to connect with other people.
And it's indirect, right? I can tell you I'm feeling sad, but it will not register with you in the same way as a piece of writing or a piece of art or a piece of theater or a song that that expresses that feeling. And, you know, not all art is good, right? You can express the feeling poorly, but that doesn't change the fact that it's still an expression. You can express a feeling in a way that does not connect with the audience. That's totally fine. That's the point of art. Some people will connect with it.
Right. And, you know, and this, by the way, this also goes along with things like maps, because I've had people like, you know, well, yes, your maps are artistic, but they're not art. That's your opinion.
Yeah. You says who, buddy?
Right. Because let me tell you, there's like, you know, because you and I have worked together, I put so much world building, even if I never share it with I put so much world building into just making it. It is storytelling to me. Making my maps, there are so much tiny details. Yeah. There are so many little things in it that if you genuinely sit there and crawl across any one of my maps, you're going to find all sorts of really weird, sometimes, but hopefully very interesting things, because I'm telling a story and it's just, you know, I'm leaving it as a single piece. And that's, to me, still art. And that's the point of it. But so I think that AI is giving a false sense of being an artist. And the other thing is, I think that there's a bunch of people who think that, oh my God, I can't believe an artist would charge this much. It couldn't possibly take you as long as you claim. Or, you know, like I recently had someone message me and like, how much are your maps? And I was like, anywhere from $1 to $2,000 easily, because it takes me a week or two to draw all this. Because I one, don't have any software that generates my style. It is all drawn by hand. And it takes a lot of time. But I get that you can't afford it. Please don't go out and make AI generated my art. Be nice.
Devin, I'm so glad you brought up the topic of the cost of art, because this is one of my sort of deeply held beliefs about why AI art is not good now, but it could be fine if things were different. I truly believe right now that AI generated images, text, music, anything like that would be okay if working people were afforded universal basic income. If I didn't need to make money off of my art, I would not mind if I were losing out on jobs. Right. Because, you know, at the end of the day, I think I make very good art. I think my game design is worthwhile. I think my writing is evocative. And I think the people who buy it from me agree. And that's good. I have some modicum of job security in that way. And if for some reason, you know, a CEO of a big game company decided, why are we spending thousands, tens of thousands of dollars every year on writing from freelancers when we could be generating it through ChatGPT and then having our in-house team edit it to make it work, right? Let's get rid of all of the designers. Let's basically just have everyone be editors. And that's a positive I've heard touted by people at Microsoft and things like that who really believe in the power of ChatGPT and other AI tools. And, you know, I have certain beliefs about the artistic value of AI art, yes. I could be convinced to get over those.
Right.
Because I still earnestly believe in my heart that even 100 years from now, even 1,000 years from now, people will want art that's been created by a human being. It will bring them a special, you know, there's a je ne sais quoi to it, right? I'm not sure people will be able to fully articulate why they like human-made art, why it feels more meaningful and special to them than something created by a machine learning algorithm. Mm-hmm. But it will continue to have great meaning. And people will want to seek out artists. And if an artist wants to work for pay, people will find a way to pay for that art. That's the way it is now. But if there were a way to guarantee a basic standard of living for all people, then, you know, I would continue making art. I would make art all day. I would write all day. I would design games all day with no particular special desire for remuneration from an audience. You know, my ego would still crave a certain amount of recognition. You know, I would long for that, but I wouldn't mind if I wasn't making a shit ton of money. I feel incredibly grateful that I'm able to work in my creative field. Not a lot of people have that luxury, but I would gladly lay that back and do creative work solely for my own benefit if I could feel like I didn't need to work hard labor instead to, you know, get to put food on the table.
Right. I mean, you know, it's so when I first started my Patreon in 2014, geez. God damn, that's been a long time. I didn't realize how long it was. Jeez. When I started, one of the reasons I was doing it was because I was giving my maps away for free. I wasn't creating maps for people for free because I can't afford that.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have maps that I have available for free download, like on my... The idea was that eventually, if I could earn enough through Patreon to cover my monthly bills, then, all of my art, because I don't want to have to charge to create art. I just want to create the art. And I think most artists definitely feel that way.
Yes. I mean, legitimately, people on the internet love to say, oh my God, why did you paywall this? Like, bro, I want you to see this art. I don't want to paywall anything. I just want to eat.
Right.
I want to live in a house with a bed. Yeah. That's all this is for.
Let me tell you, if I had enough patrons to help pay my bills every month, then you know what? Fuck, nothing would be behind a paywall.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing.
Yeah, but people, I don't know. The image of the artist is a challenging one, because on one hand, you, just like you were saying, you have either the image of the starving college student, or you have this sort of luxuriant penthouse dwelling creative who holds a glass of wine while toplessly making errant brushstrokes. I mean, either we are, you know, we should be saying, do you want fries with that, because we've got an art degree,
right?
Or we are somehow this sort of snobby elitist, and man, we're people. We're just people, and we like making cool things, and we feel really, really good when people say they like those cool things. And it hurts to see a computer do that stuff.
Right. It hurts more in that, you know, here's a fantastic example. So I created the maps for Critical Role.
Yeah.
And
it's a good gig if you can get it.
right. Is it though? There are some downsides. Not many, thankfully enough. But there,
no gig's
there's
perfect.
A few. Yeah. But you know, when I first started making them, they started using them on packaging, and it was great because originally I was being messaged, you know, oh, you know, we want to use this, we want that, and I was like, you can use it for whatever you. If you want to wait until it's a surprise for me, because I love that, please feel free. Mm-hmm. You know, they sent me, I forgot what they originally sent me, but there was, of course, my art on the package. Oh, I think it was one of the blankets. And I was like, oh my God, one of my maps is on their envelopes. This is just fucking cool, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's how they're like, hey, you know? So I posted that, and immediately a bunch of people were like, oh, how dare they use your art without compensating you or not telling you and blah, blah, blah. First off, you don't know that. Like, I specifically stated, like, for things like this, no, let me find out like everyone else, because I just think stuff is cool. I just care about making really cool shit and putting it out in the world. Like, I don't have to be compensated for every little thing, but I do want the acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, here I am, like, all excited over that. And then on a post, I had somebody else credit Matt for making the map that I had made. And I'm like, how dare you, you know, like, but I mean, it is a collaborative thing, so I didn't correct anybody, but also I was like, that's my art style, because someone credited him with like having a great drawing style. And I was like, but it's mine, you know? So give us our accolades. Definitely tell us we did it, you know, that you love it. Contribute even a small amount to our monthly Patreons or however we want to, and you will get free art.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing. This narrative has been floating around a lot because of the Actors and Writers Guild strikes going on in Hollywood right now. There is this narrative of the greedy artist. Mm-hmm. Oh, look at these artists who want to be compensated when they sort of laze around. They don't do any hard work.
Right.
And, you know, I think hard work is somewhat subjective. I think I do hard work. You know, it's very different from manual labor. It's very different from, you know, being on my feet all day, anything like that. But I put in my hours and I do my research, and it's, you know, it's in many ways my work is kind of academic. It's and I don't think you hear people calling, you know, researchers or professors or people like that lazy. But ultimately this boils down to a narrative that pits working artists against the CEOs and other administrators of the companies that hire them. And I just gotta say, I don't think this narrative is coming from normal people. I think that I'm trying not to sound like a conspiracy theorist here, because I don't think there's any sort of like, I don't think there's a grand conspiracy, but I think it is in the best interest of corporate owners who want to save on their bottom line and further enrich themselves, or at least lower their operating costs, to have the public think ill of the people who are doing the grunt work of creating characters and animation and scripts and music and art for their properties. Because what was that? This just happened a few days ago, as of the recording. There was there was a property summit in which a real estate billionaire said something about, like, I think unemployment should be 50 to 60% higher than it is because these workers don't understand what a privilege it is to be working. And I just, you know, I threw up in my mouth. This is the attitude that people, not all people, I should say, but many people who own large, incredibly wealthy, billion dollar business ventures think of. There's a level of arrogance and narcissism that I think is kind of a requisite to making that much money in the first place.
Well, I actually think it goes beyond that, because there is such a I'm a hard work, you know, the only real people that work are people who don't have desk jobs or do manual labor. Obviously, you know, we're all sitting around eating bonbons, drinking wine, topless. It's not real work. You're just flinging paint onto a canvas. You're just drawing. You're having fun and playing all day. And it is that mentality. And that's, again, big reason why I wanted to do this podcast, was that that isn't the reality of it. Like, I wish to God that all I did was got to fucking doodle all day like it was fun. But instead, I have deadlines, NDAs, bills to pay. I have websites to run. I have people to answer. I am my customer service, my CEO, the artist behind doing everything, my bookkeeper. Like, I do all of this. And so do most artists and writers.
And boy, would you rather be doodling than doing all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wish even just the doodling was me playing all day. That would be fucking great.
Well, if it weren't for all of this sort of menial, administrative, and to be honest, even skill-building work that artists of any discipline do, if it weren't for all that, I don't think there would be any AI art debate, because it would be so easy that anyone could do it with minimal effort.
Yeah.
Like, the cost barrier to entry any of these artistic disciplines is nothing. Right. If you have, okay, it's cents. It costs maybe a $3 trip to the dollar store to buy paper and pencils. And I'm being a little bit facetious here. You know, of course, if you want to learn how to write well, you should do a lot of reading. If you want to learn how to draw well, you should you should look at a lot of art. You should probably learn from someone who knows what they're doing. So a little bit of facetiousness here. But the material cost of just...
To start.
Yeah.
Mind you. It,
just to start...
To continue.
Oh, to continue. I mean, if you're buying expensive papers and gouache and all these paints, or, you know, digital software from Adobe that requires a subscription, or, you know, it gets pricey.
Well, I don't know. Let's talk about the fact that you just started a YouTube channel. How much are you fucking spending to start that?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, there are many people on YouTube who film just with their phone, and that is serviceable, but I want my videos to be something that will stand the test of time. I want people to be able to come back to these in 5 years and have it still be a decent sound and video quality. And I've paid something about $600, and I've for a mic and camera, and I feel like I've got off pretty cheap. You know, I bought a lot of stuff secondhand on eBay. This is stuff, you know, a camera that would retail for between $1,200 and $2,000. Some wonderful person on eBay was selling it for about $400. And all of those things, that's not even to start, you know, the cost of the Adobe prescription subscription.
I mean, it
feels like
it.
A prescription sometimes. you know, Adobe After Effects and Premiere, they cost a lot of money every month.
Yeah.
So ultimately, you know, the YouTube channel is said to be a hobby of mine, a pretty expensive hobby, I should say, but, you know, a hobby nonetheless. Just like this podcast is your hobby, Devin, and it's cost you, I'm sure, quite a lot of time and money to get the equipment and the, you know, all of that set up for it.
This was actually, I was talking the other day with Bree that this is the cheapest fucking endeavor that I have ever started. Because I already had the mic because I'm recording for my cartography class. And the only thing that I was paying for was the Adobe Audition to edit this. And, well, fuck Adobe. So I am Adobe is a free elf. I canceled my subscription because I found that the editing, video editing software, because I use Wondershare with Filmora, which is fantastic. I absolutely fucking love it. But I found out that they'll export just the audio. And I was like, oh, I could just edit the whole thing. I already have the software. God damn it. But yeah, so far this is the cheapest hobby I have. Everything else, ridiculously expensive.
And so what I'm really driving at here is, you know, you can start writing with a pencil and paper. You can start drawing with a pencil and paper. You can start filming with your phone and a tripod. All of these, we are living in the best era in human history for low barriers of entry to creative pursuits that have typically been prohibitively expensive.
Yes.
And as you become, you know, more professional, more skilled, more sophisticated in your creativity, yes, cost will rise. But if you are trying to skimp out on the hard work, which is the real cost, I'm going to sound like I'm a, you know, like I'm a 55-year-old dad here. Like, if you skimp out on the hard work, you won't learn anything, son. But like, it's true. You will always be shackled to a program that has whims of its own. You will be shackled to Midjourney or whatever it is that has an algorithm which is a black box, just like the YouTube algorithm confounds YouTube creators every day, just like the Twitter algorithm confounds people on Twitter or Instagram or whatever every single day. This is a system utterly beyond your control, and you will constantly be fighting with it. And that sort of lack of creative control is what drives people to kill.
Plus,
you will not be creatively satisfied.
Right. And you're at the whim of a corporation.
Yes.
If they decide that this isn't profitable, this all goes away.
Yes. There are many people, many artists who have just, you know, said, fuck it, and left a nice corporate job and gone to set up a Patreon because they have more creative control that way.
Yes. You know, and even with that, I mean, that's one of the reasons why, like, I give people alternatives to being on Patreon because, you know, if we remember a couple years ago, Patreon decided without consulting any of us that they were going to start charging our patrons more money to cover our costs. And I was like, wait a minute. No. Like, don't get us wrong. Of course, the artists, you know, we're doing the work. We would like to get more of the money. But consult us or give us the option or let our patrons choose. Like, don't fucking do it for us. And the amount of people that just left Patreon because they were so fucking tired of their bullshit, I was like, hey, I now offer subscriptions on my website through my Discord. You know, this gives you an alternative, you know, to having to deal with a major corporation. Because again, hello fellow artists, please don't put eggs in one basket. Don't be subservient to a corporation that could decide they don't like your account, it's gone.
Right. It is regrettable that the only way for artists to make a living is through corporate means, right? Whether whether it's working for a corporation on, you know, work for hire work, like many of us do for Wizards of the Coast, for example. But even, you know, even if you were an independent artist seeking pledges on Patreon, you still have a corporate middleman to go through. There really is no freedom unless you have somehow managed to recreate a 15th century patron and artist situation where you live in the home of an eccentric billionaire and sort of paint for them in a grotto somewhere. And I don't think very many of us are afforded that opportunity these days.
Back when I was a kid, me and Taliesin from the dawn of time.
Well,
we remember those days.
We've talked a lot about money and creativity and things like that. And I want to bring up the topic that made me want to talk specifically with you about this, mm-hmm. Devin, and it's when I, a month or two ago, by the time of release, there was a scandal involving Wizards of the Coast and their then new release, Bigby Presents Glory of the Giants, because mm-hmm. it featured probably about five or six art pieces that involved AI-generated elements. And this was really quite a fascinating story to watch unfold, because at the end of the day, the AI was used by an artist that had pieces all the way back in the 2014 Monster Manual for 5th edition. And so we can start understanding why Wizards, who is coming out pretty publicly as being 100% opposed to using AI-generated images in their books, and all products, because they have such a great relationship with artists, they do not want to poison that well. It slipped past their art directors because it came from an artist they trusted, and they committed to replacing or reworking those art pieces in the final book, and they will appear un-AI-ified in reprints.
Yes.
And in addition to all of that, maybe the most galling thing about all of this is that in a process that is not totally alien to the Wizards' art flow, one artist provided concept sketches for a variety of things, dinosaurs, giants, wolves, things like that. And those sketches were handed off to another artist for completion. To do the full digital painting, render, the whole nine
concept
yards.
Concept art is used as a reference for what they're sort of looking for in the final product.
Mm-hmm. And this artist who created the concept sketches is a vehemently anti-AI artist. And through the middleman of Wizards art directors, it was passed to this seemingly innocuous artist, right? Again, they've worked with this artist for almost 10 years now without any issues. And that artist took those sketches and, in his words, I believe, finished them with AI. And basically those sketches, to the best of my knowledge, were fed through an AI generative algorithm, and the rendering was kind of all done by machine. While it may not be visible at a cursory glance, eagle-eyed fans were quick to notice all of the usual foibles of AI on these things. Swords that kind of look weirdly organic, the metal was all wrong. Wolves with eyes that don't quite look right. Wolves with paws that look like human hands. Giants with arms that look like they have two elbows. It's shoddy work perpetrated by AI. But even if the work weren't shoddy, even if the work were perfect, it would have been a violation of the principles of both the original artist and of the company that commissioned the final artwork. Yeah. And there was a big blow up about this. Anyway, all this to say, I found myself in the midst of this discord because I am myself vehemently anti-AI art in our current day and age, in our current historical context. And one person, I had quite an interesting conversation with this person. She is a visual artist herself. Sometime in the past few years, she suffered an ocular stroke, which in addition to affecting her vision, had all sorts of neurological effects that makes it difficult to be creative for much of the day. Mm-hmm. And she considers AI to be a creative godsend because it allows her to maintain the creative lifestyle that she is accustomed to. She can continue creating art. She can continue exercising her own artistic abilities. It's just that a lot of the arduous work is handled by these machine learning algorithms. And I found myself immensely conflicted reading what she had to say to me. I you know, I am not disabled in that way. I'm keenly aware of the fact that I may one day become disabled in that way. You know, I'm diabetic. One of the major long-term complications of diabetes is diabetic retinopathy, degradation of the retinas, which may render me partially or completely blind in ways that, you know, everyone is at risk of becoming disabled at some point in their lives through no fault of their own. But, you know, this is something I can foresee. This is something I can imagine. I could lose sensation in my extremities due to nerve degradation based on diabetic complications. I take very good care of my diabetes. I do my very best to ensure that I am healthy now and will be healthy for a long time to come, but you never know about these things. And so I read what she said with an incredible amount of sympathy, and I really tried to put myself in her shoes. And even having had a month to have this conversation kick around in the back of my head, I still don't know where I fall on this. And so I'm really curious to hear from you, Devin, who often has to navigate the intersections of disability and the creative life, and talk with you about this.
So I generally feel, as I stated before, if AI could be used as the like concept, if I could generate something where, oh, I want to make a portrait of a woman drinking wine. If I could put that in, have it generate an image so I can use that as my big concept. Fantastic. It's a reference. That is glorious. That saves me the time of trying to find it, creating it through photography or whatever. I have no problem with that as long as, again, every artist that has had artwork used to create this algorithm has been adequately compensated and has given their consent. Because ethically, as an artist, as much as it would... So my visual impairment makes it so I cannot see three dimension. I live in a very two-dimensional world. Which means that when I go to create my art, I have a really, really hard drawing in three dimension, despite how, thank you everyone who tells me my art is, that is awesome. I don't know that though. I'm just drawing because I studied a great deal about light and using negative space to create light effects. And this is actually what got me the most. And that let me know that people saw it in more depth than I can. If I go to draw, like, let's say, a portrait of somebody, because the face is so shallow and I don't see in three dimension, none of my portraits ever look that good. Or they take me such an extremely long time to draw because I'm constantly reworking it in order to get any depth out of it. It does. It makes it really difficult. If I could have something that put lighting exactly where I needed it, so I could create that in the colors and everything that I... Yes. That would be great. It would save a lot of time. But again, I would only want to do that if I know that other artists that are as desperate as I am to be able to do something we are this passionate about living... are compensated. I cannot use these tools, no matter how much it would make my life a lot easier. I can't use them until I know that those people are taken care of, because that's not fair. I like the whole thing that happened with like wizards. I have a huge problem with the fact that we are given these concept images and we're told This is what you're basing off. We're not told to copy it. We're not told anything like that. We're specifically said this is the color scheme we're looking for, or this is the, you know, whatever we're looking for. You know, they specify. The fact that this person who is an artist, God damn it, You're a fucking artist. You know how hard this shit is.
Yeah.
And you, first off, you run it through a program that you know now will use that for learning purposes.
Mm-hmm.
You gave another artist's art unconsentingly to AI. Mm-hmm. You asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And then you generate an image out of it. I don't know if they tweaked it at all or what they did beyond that. And that's what you fucking hand in. Like, you use someone else's art.
Mm-hmm.
Even before AI, our hardest thing in the world is to stop people from stealing our art and reselling it.
Mm-hmm.
I keep thinking of that asshole who took other people's Instagram posts, printed them up on big fucking canvases, hung them in a gallery, and sold them for thousands of dollars.
My God.
And they're other people's Instagram posts. Like, what the fuck? No. That's, you know, fuck, no. Just, so yeah. So I have a huge problem with this artist. I'm very opinionated.
Yeah. you know, I have seen behind the curtain of the art direction process at Wizards, mm-hmm. and I have not seen behind it enough to, you know, say that I'm an expert. I don't know right. what the workflow is all the time. I know they're often very busy and they're always juggling, you know, seven plates at once. It does surprise me that a piece of rendered art that looked identical to the concept art in Pose, etc., was just sort of rendered and returned. That surprised me because in, say, for example, Call of the Netherdeep, nothing like that happened with regards to the concept art that was turned in. Like, you can look in that book, you can see concept art in the back of the book.
Right.
And then you can see art pieces that were clearly inspired by those concept illustrations in the rest of the book.
Yes.
But none that are just that sketch with a render layer.
Well,
applied to it. And you know, there might have been extenuating circumstances. Again, I don't care to speculate because a lot of these people are professionals, and I know from experience how hardworking these creatives at Wizards are. I have a lot of respect for their creativity. But it is strange.
It is, except that for a lot of these books, there are numerous artists per book. Like, it is not unusual to have anywhere from 10 to 20 artists, just artists.
Yeah, look at those credits pages, folks. They're huge.
Right. On top of all the writers and everything else. So, like, you know, for everyone else who's been like, how did this get through? Honestly, well, first off, it is a year between...
Mm-hmm.
No, let me rephrase this. It is longer than a year.
Yeah.
Because by the time that there's a concept for, okay, this book is what's going to be made next, all of the procedures and everything follow, they start working writers. The writers come first, the second. And then by the time that the coming in, because we all have those deadlines, they finish up the writing after that, depending on what goes on, then the layout. By the time that an art piece is approved, it doesn't get looked at again until it goes to layout. So they don't know. And where it should have been picked up was the final approval.
Yeah.
Because that is supposed to be marked, you know, pretty much measured up against how every... But there are a lot of people involved in every book. So, and there's a year or two or more between when you actually provide them with the artwork and when the book starts being announced, much less mm-hmm. is actually released. Because I think we get like easily 4 to 6 months between when they announce the next book coming out.
Oh, easily, sometimes more.
Oh yeah, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. So I don't necessarily... I mean, I agree. It passes by so many people. How the fuck did you not notice? But also at the same time, if you're looking at that much stuff and you are herding cats,
mm-hmm.
at some point, you're just like, yep, yeah, it's good. We're good.
Well, it's so interesting because this element of art direction is it's interesting we're talking about AI here, because this is the purest example I can think of human error.
Yes.
This sort of review process, this is the sort of thing that I would say is first in line for computerized assistance. To have, like, you know, it's like plagiarism software in your local university's submissions. And hey, speaking of local university submissions, they are afflicted with a rash of ChatGPT written essays, etc. You know, from the university level all the way down to the middle school level. It's like so easy to just say, hey, ChatGPT, generate me an essay, which makes it harder to deal with plagiarism than ever before, because that's what we're talking about here.
Yes.
It's what you've been talking about here. When you have no control over what the training data for a machine learning algorithm is, and you are producing creative work based on it, it is impossible not to plagiarize.
Yes.
And that's just a hard and fast rule that anyone who's using these technologies right now needs to understand and needs to internalize. And like, if you're not aware of that, if you think, you know, I'm not judging you for that. This is something that it's a brand new technology, and it has immense implications that unless you are looking at it from a very big picture, you may not even notice, right? I mean, I think most people who use AI are looking at a very specific facet of it. They're looking, you know, maybe they are just an everyday person who is like, I want art of my D&D character.
Mm-hmm.
Type in a prompt to Midjourney or something, bam, there's perfectly passable art of your D&D character. Yes, you have, you know, it's art that's plagiarized from dozens, if not hundreds of different people. But, you know, you're not selling it. If you really wanted something that's true to life for your D&D character, you'd probably still commission an artist anyway, because you could have creative control over it in a way that Midjourney wouldn't let you. You know, it's almost right. A moot point. And honestly, even if you're a professional, based on his online presence, I believe the artist who created this whole snafu for Wizards was, he is clearly enamored with the technology behind AI, and I honestly can't blame him for that. It's truly revolutionary, almost miraculous technology that I have no doubt will change the digital landscape in unimaginable ways in the years and decades to come. I mean, it already has. So to get kind of myopic about this, I don't like it, but I almost can't blame you, because you're so focused on one particular element.
Right. I tinkered with it when it first came out, because I was really interested.
Yeah.
Because anyone who knows me knows I love to learn new stuff, and software amongst that. So I was really interested, because as somebody who I constantly have to reference it, I have to either hope that I can find something that fits exactly what I'm looking for, or I have to recreate it and take a photo of it and get lighting, draping if there's fabric. There's a lot of things that are involved in it. And if I could, again, if I could find something where I just type that in a few times and actually get something close enough that I'm like, oh, that's perfect, that's my reference, and then I can make my art off of that, 100%. I would absolutely use it on a daily basis. However, again, it's coming at a cost, and that's other people's livelihoods.
Yeah.
And as an artist myself, I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to rally behind something that would make it easier, but I can't. You know, and I understand that there's a lot of people out there who feel that they don't have artistic skills or ability, and that this is the closest they feel that they're going to get. And they want the accolades of being an artist. They want to feel like they're generating something that people can connect with. We all want to connect with other people. I understand this completely. But that doesn't excuse using something at the expense of so many other people just so you can have someone like, hey, great picture.
And this is a problem that I think the world we're living in has exacerbated, right? We live in a world that is often bound by the clock. We are removed from a lot of human contact in the day-to-day by the digital necessities of the world. There are so many barriers that the modern world has presented to us that get in the way of genuine human interaction, genuine human love and affection. And sometimes all you can hope for is, you know, if you are drowning in the digital sea, you can kind of look at people on Instagram who get 200,000 likes on a piece of art and right. lust for that.
Right.
And because you can only, you can imagine how happy they must be
right.
to be so connected.
To be so seen.
To be so seen, to be so validated, to be so loved by so many people.
There's a whole other side to that, though. As somebody who is uncomfortable with the way that a lot of people other me,
mm-hmm.
because they believe I have whatever level of notoriety or fame or connection to other people, as wonderful as you might think that those 200, 2,000, whatever likes are or comments, it doesn't provide you with any further genuine contact with people like you think it would.
Yes, I agree. It's a cursed sort of veneer of connection. And the true connection
yes.
that comes from art is the creative collaboration. It's the sharing your art with other artists.
Yes.
Curiously, I think the AI art community that's risen up around Midjourney and similar things, similar applications, has started to emulate that, right? It is a group of people who are working together to figure out how to use this algorithm, who are sharing the art that they have generated using it, and who, you know, it's a supportive community.
Well, I don't know because I'm not involved, but I do believe that Midjourney at least forces you to. I think it.
Right, because it works out of a Discord.
Right, so yes. it just announces that you've done something. So you don't. I don't think you get a choice to hear it. I think it just does it for you.
That.
Yeah. So I think that there's a lot of politeness, but it goes back to the person who is really mad because they wanted to be paid for. They're charging people for specific things to type into Midjourney to get images. Geez. Right. So I don't necessarily know that they're exactly being comrades and joining because us yeah. artists tend to really love to share the tools and stuff that we use.
Right.
With each other. So
check out the new brush set I found.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Immediately everyone's like, oh, you're not using Photoshop anymore? What are you using? I use this. You know,
right.
The
amount of free art tutorials I see Japanese artists post
yes.
on their Twitters. I saw someone recently who discovered how to make that a very specific sort of lighting effect in 2D. Computer animation that emulates the sort of soft blue glow and bright white glow from 90s anime when there's a clear section of an animation cell, right? Because an animation mm-hmm. cell has a light shown behind it when it's transcribed to film. So there's this really unique glow effect, and they showed how they did it. They made something in Maya, and there was this whole Twitter thread about it. And like that's artistic collaboration.
Yes.
That's sharing the tools you developed.
Yes, because artists want more art in the world.
Yeah. And to me, you know, someone who charges for their services in creating DALL-E or Midjourney prompts, I mean, I guess that is technically a skill. It's something that not anyone can do. So I should, you know, it's a skill that's been developed. But
right.
it's I would not call it artistic.
No.
It's and it's so strange to me that well, it's oh man, this is a stupid analogy, but you know, it's the dark side of the force, right? It's the quick and easy route.
Yes.
To immense power, but ultimately it controls you.
Yeah, because you can't make any of that art without it, which means that you're not really making art.
Yeah,
I mean that's ultimately what it comes down to.
Yeah,
like I don't have to have a computer to make art. I can paint on a canvas, I can draw on paper, I can paint, I can do watercolors, like. I obviously don't need specific software because I've been drawing. If you need something like that in order to create art, and by the way, this isn't like saying like, oh, digital artists make art. I don't mean it like that, because clearly they can. I know that a lot of them feel like they would never be able to do canvas, but rest assured you can. Mm-hmm. And a lot of you, if you tried, I'm sure would fall in love with it, because there's something tactile about it that makes it really fun. But it isn't, like I say, everyone asks us, well, what brushes did you use, what computer? None of that matters. The amount of people that make some gorgeous maps on Incarnate, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful maps, right? Without a doubt, some of them make phenomenal fucking maps, and they're still using Incarnate. And it's the same exact thing. It is the skill behind it and the creativity that makes it a really outstanding piece. So if they found something else that wasn't Incarnate, or if they knew how to draw, they would find that creativity there. That's how creativity, it's not necessarily the tools you're using, but your brain, it's your imagination.
It's a topic I don't like discussing, because I don't like, I feel like when I talk about things like this, like I'm being mean to people who just want to create beauty in the world, like I'm gatekeeping. And that's the opposite of what I want to do. But I really want to urge people who want to be creative, who want yes. to make beauty in the world, who want to express the ideas that they have in their head,
right.
and make them visible or intelligible to other people, to start from scratch and start from being terrible.
Right.
Because you will not be terrible forever. You know, we can talk all day about, you know, skill versus innate talent versus anything like that, but
there is no such thing.
All right, conversation over. There is no such thing as innate talent. Bam, there right. we have it.
Well, no matter what, it is, you're using your imagination, and it's
yeah.
it does take you constantly practicing and using it and everything else in order for you to develop the skill you need to create what you want, what's going on in your head. That takes practice to learn how to take it out of your head and put it out on paper or canvas or whatever. So the concept of innate talent is so misguiding. It makes so many people feel like you are born an artist or you're just not. And that's not true. All of us have to work really fucking hard. You know, like, I wasn't born magically being able to draw maps like this. I wish I was. That would have been great. Man, yeah. that would have saved me so much time and effort. I would have just fucking become a cartographer, like, immediately out of high school and not suffered like I did. But, and I also think that it does perpetuate the concept that we're all born, some are just born better or whatever dumbass shit. That isn't true. Anybody can learn to draw. You just have to have the time and dedication to want to do it. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that we're born with that people aren't is the drive and passion to do it.
And there are plenty of external factors, right, that
yes.
that can inhibit the time and ability to do that, right? You know, we've talked about disability a lot here, but, you know, there's also economic hardship, social
yes.
hardship. All of those things make it very, very difficult. And I consider myself incredibly lucky that I have not had to deal with some of those things in the way that many other people have. It's made me quite able to pursue a creative career.
As always, our show is sponsored by Legend Keeper, a fantastic world-building tool, whether you're a writer, a GM, DM, or even a player. You can create a world, you can add all of your notes, you can determine who gets to see them, edit them, create their own. And if you own a project, you are the only person who has to have a subscription, so you can bring your players in for free, or your readers, or your patrons. You can determine who can edit, who can see, who can hold, who can view secrets. And there are so many really interesting tools on Legend Keeper that allow you to link pages, maps, images, sidebars, timelines, calendars, like you name it. There is so much about Legend Keeper that is so simple and yet incredibly effective.
When I was trying to become an actor, I went to school for theater, and I wound up finding myself a writer coming out of it for a variety of reasons. One of the things that my professors told me, that my mentors told me, was that if you can do anything other than acting, do it.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time to understand that advice truly at the level that they meant it. Because at first I thought they were just sort of being self-effacing, right? Like, it's like, oh yeah, this career sucks, don't do it.
Yeah.
But really, really what they meant is more than that. Because the creative life is often incredibly arduous. You got to go through a lot of bullshit in order to live a professionally creative life. Anyone can live a creative life. And I think everyone should lead a creative life. That's fundamental
to
human condition, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But to lead a professionally creative life often forces you to make concessions to your pure creative outlet in the effort of making money. There are things you must sacrifice at the altar of capitalism in order to survive off of your art. And, you know, every day I mourn some of those things that I must sacrifice about my creative work in order to continue making money off of it.
Yes.
And so, you know, that's why they say, if you can do anything other than acting, do it, because you will still have that creative drive. And if you feel like there is anything else you can do in your life, you will not have that insatiable drive that is required to be professionally creative. That thing that no matter how shitty it gets, you will continue striving because it's the only damn thing you know you will ever want to do.
Yes.
And for me, game design is that. I did not even really fully realize that for myself until I got into this profession truly. But I'd wanted ever since I was something like 2 or 3 years old, since I learned that you can test video games for Nintendo. And it just happened ultimately through a set of remarkable circumstances. And I never want to let the momentum up, because I know if I lose it, if this opportunity falls away from me, I will be adrift. And people come back from things like that all the time. But I don't want to. I don't want a race to the bottom to pull that rug out from under me. And ultimately, that is where so much of my fear of AI comes from. And I'll fully admit to it being a fear. I live in fear and awe of this remarkable new technology. And I hope from the bottom of my heart that people will understand how to use it ethically.
Yes.
For the sake of, you know, for the sake of all of us, for the sake of all people who want to create art.
Yes. And even once you make it your, or as make it as whatever
right.
that looks like to you,
right.
You will still have everybody undermine you.
Yeah.
The amount of people that say things like, get a real job. You do what for a living? That's a real thing. Yeah, yeah. I know it's hard to understand that professional fantasy cartographer exists, but it does. And it always feels like everybody else thinks, oh, well, you don't actually work, right? No, I really fucking work.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how else to phrase this. I really fucking work.
Really, really.
Right. And most of us work far more than 8-hour days. We work more than 5 days a week.
Oh my God. If I told you the number of 3 a.m. nights I had while I was writing for D&D Beyond.
Yep.
Purely by my own volition, because right. I needed my output to be the quality I needed to be, like obsessively. I needed that writing to be the quality I wanted to be.
But that's how you make it in this industry.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't ever want to perpetuate the gig culture, the workaholic. But at the same time, you know, there's no matter how many things you have put out, everyone's looking for a specific standard.
Yeah.
If it doesn't match that or exceed it, or if it doesn't stand out on its own accord, again, in no way, not shade to anyone else who make any kind of art. But the reason that my name is so out there is because my art fucking stands out.
Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the true tragedy of AI art. In addition to everything we've talked about today, is that these machine learning algorithms trend towards the median. They create artistic porridge. And in many cases, you know, it's pretty. And it may even have, you know, a superficial element of artistic merit. The color composition may be great. The silhouettes might be remarkable. They might be, you know, quite professional. But it's only because so much good work, truly inventive, exceptional work, has been fed into the machine and homogenized into its outputs.
Exactly. And you won't be able to have a consistent style either.
Yeah.
And because of that, you won't get
Yeah, for sure.
Right. Right. And that means you don't get hired as an artist. You won't get the jobs or whatever because you can't be consistent. And that's what people are paying for. When someone comes to me for a map, they're not paying just because I draw maps. They're paying because I draw the same style maps. That's what makes an artist an artist.
Your fellow D&D map making colleague Dyson Logos went through a crisis like this maybe a year or two ago now, where someone presented a digital tool that basically allowed you to patchwork maps together in his incredibly visually distinctive hatched style. Because his style is, and I say this with a great deal of love, it's a simple style. That's one of the great levels of appeal of his styles, that it uses very clear, distinct line work in monochrome that makes it incredibly legible at a glance. That's and there's incredible artistry in that. And
by the way, he does beautiful art as well. He's not just that, but he does gorgeous art. You can immediately tell that it's either his work or based off of his, because it does, even as simplistic as it is clearly a style. It's clearly his style.
And there
even
is,
if it's just patchwork.
And there's enormous strength in simplicity. And on top of all of that, you know, he gives away hundreds of art pieces, you know, not just free for use at your game table. All of his maps and illustrations are that, but for commercial work. I mean, that guy's maps are single-handedly, I think sometimes, supporting the third-party D&D publishing community. His art is in everything. Yep. And that level of generosity, I mean, how is it repaid? Well, it's repaid by someone creating an app that does his style for you.
Right.
I cannot imagine the insult that it was to him, the demoralizing strike to the jaw that it was. I saw him post about it on Facebook years ago when that happened. That sort of sense of community, of creative collaboration, of creative communication, that's that's why this YouTube channel that I've just launched is so important to me. I am not just obsessed with hearing myself talk. And if I am, I'm sure that editing my own videos will soon cure me of that particular disease.
Does it ever? Oh my God.
But it's that the communities, the social media communities that we have right now, I engage in Twitter, and I have a couple of Discords that I kind of drift in and out of, because if I'm being totally honest, Discord tends to overwhelm me. But with Twitter being just incandescent with its death throes, it seems like a new place is needed. And if I'm being totally honest, the RPG Twitter that I loved back in 2017, that seemed like such a fruitful place for discussions of game design, for people to share their new creations, for people to just like talk with people who seemed so out of their league, to randomly bend the ear of Chris Perkins or someone like that. That RPG Twitter does not exist anymore. And it's for myriad reasons, but the new management of Twitter right now and the sort of cascading downfall of quality has certainly put the final nail in its coffin for the community that I loved back in, 2016 through 2019, ever returning to that platform. And so, if I'm being totally honest, I don't want a huge community anymore. Your Discord has some, 200-300 people in it, if I'm remembering right. And that's a wonderful size. Well, I cut my teeth on web forums in the early 2000s. That's my first sort of point of engagement with online nerd culture and discussion. And I loved it. I loved how people could hold individual conversations and then it would kind of bleed back into a main talk. Anyway.
Yeah.
When I post videos talking about a game design discussion, my real hope is not that people will go, "Oh, James, you're so intelligent." I'll bring up a topic and people will say, "Oh, this makes a lot of sense. I never thought about it this way before." Or, "You say this, but I'm not sure I understand what you mean. Can other people talk about this?" Or, "I followed this advice when I was making my very first one-page RPG. I posted it here. What do you think?" And that's a community of discussion and sharing. That's what I want to create here. That's what's beginning to be created here. And it's why I hope that if you're listening to this podcast, you will follow that YouTube channel, which is in the show notes. And because that's our mission here. Our mission here is not to sell a lot of stuff or to make a lot of ad money or to, become famous. It's we love the craft of game design, of art, of writing. And we want other people to share in that with us, to develop those skills themselves.